ومجانتي من الهندسية قد انجنا سرقا يا تكشون ملتامينا تزمى شيدو لدينا مها نما ام بشنو بدايا كشنا فستايا بوتلي شيماتي بقدي بدان تسوامني تنامني نمستي سرسواتي ديبي غورواني پرشارمي يروشيشا شنجواري باست جدي ستاني جاي شي كشنا چيتانيا پرابو نتياناندا شيدويت گدارها شيواسي غورواني پرشارمي Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate garim yat kripa tamaham vande shri gunam dinatarunam.
A couple spaces in the back.
You need to make some a few adjustments.
Maybe you can move. Everybody wants to come in a little bit. Somebody wants to move back there.
So, I thank Nimai Chaitanya for his introduction, although, as I said yesterday, whatever good he sees in me is due to his own good qualities, not so much mine. He's able to see something of value, although I very much value my relationship with him, and it has been, 33 years? Yeah, it's about 33 years, that when he first started coming around, when I was the temple president in Boston, and I'll speak a little bit about these things, and then maybe we can get a little bit more into other things. But that during that time when I was the temple president, I felt a little confined as a president because my nature was more to travel and to lecture. And therefore, I invited Nimai at the time to come travel with me. Our traveling wasn't very extensive. And we would go to Maine. Portland. We would go to, where else did we go? We went to Chicago. No, we didn't go to Chicago. We went to Detroit.
New
Vrindavan. Yes, we went to New Vrindavan. Kitanagari. Yes.
New York. The school in New York.
That's right, like Huntington, upstate New York. And, I let him drive once. He nodded out at the wheel.
I did. And he woke me up.
Such bliss.
No, too much halva in the morning.
I remember. And we had good times together. Not only him, he was traveling with me, but I think Tanjaya was traveling with us. Tanjaya, who, by the way, I see every year in Italy.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, he lives not far from Bologna.
Stayed with him last summer.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, when we were in Italy, we stayed with him.
Oh,
it was really cool.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Brahmananda?
Brahmananda?
Traveled with us, yes. And it was a time for me that of also somewhat of growth, because I was feeling very, very, I was getting a sense of what Srila Prabhupada experienced, although not completely for sure, but because I had to pioneer and traveled to different places where there was nobody knew anything about Krishna consciousness. And we had to start, at least for myself, I had to start on a very simple scale of going out and chanting in the streets and inviting people to an organized program in the evening and not knowing who was going to come, if there would be nobody there, 5 there, 10 people. Srila Prabhupada often instructed us, even if nobody comes, then we should preach to the walls and be prepared. And sometimes, I think it was even like that, I can't remember. Generally, there was always somebody there with the programs we did. And then Nimai stayed in the temple for a while. Mm-hmm. And then you decided you want to go to Europe.
I went to Europe and then I came back.
That's right, went to Europe and came back. So, for me though, because I had been traveling only mostly in the New England, Northeast area of the United States, it was recommended that maybe I should travel a little bit more extensively, and in 1986 I took sannyas. And that's when all the traveling really started for me, and I lost contact to some degree because Nimai was in Europe.
Right, and then I also went to school, massage school and all that stuff.
Yes, and I remember coming and visiting you.
Yeah.
When you were living in San Jose, was it?
It was in Berkeley area.
Berkeley area, okay. Yes. You had a house that was overlooking on the side side of the hill.
Canyon.
It's in a canyon. So we kept contact always throughout the years. Mm-hmm. Never really lost it, that contact.
One time I was seeing a therapist who was not a very good therapist for me, and Maharaj appeared in my dream, honestly, and he said, "What are you seeing this person for? He's nonsense." He's not good. And I knew it was right, and he appeared in my dream. He told me, "I don't know if you knew that."
I didn't know that. I knew I traveled a lot, but I didn't know I went that far. So after taking sannyas, then Nimai went. What year did you go to school?
I think it was 87.
Yes, that's right, 87. Okay. And shortly afterwards, I went and I visited the Soviet Union. And at that time, which was still under communist rule. And somehow I got entangled in continuing to travel there. I've been traveling there for 25 years now. And I had a very wonderful experience because, as I said, that when I first started traveling, I got a sense of what it must have been like for Srila Prabhupada, having come to the West with no institutional backing, no finances, not knowing anybody, and all he had was the order of his spiritual master and a very fixed, unwavering desire to share Krishna consciousness with others. And for me, what was most impressive, although I didn't meet Srila Prabhupada, of course, until much later, but of having heard of it, was his willingness to accept any situation that Krishna put him in, whether it was living in the streets or living in a loft in the Bowery, or having no place to go, having been thrown out of the loft in the Bowery. And he was fixed, Vyavasa Yatmaka Buddhi. He would oftentimes quote that verse from Bhagavad Gita, Vyavasa Yatmaka Buddhi, Ekeha Kuru Nandana. It says those are on their path, on this path, are resolute in purpose and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Guru, is the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many branched. And Srila Prabhupada always showed his resoluteness to accept any situation as the will of the Lord, and would not compromise his determination for sharing what he had in his heart and his desire to give. As Nimai was saying last night, that it's very rare to find a soul who gives selflessly and without expecting anything in return. So having that example in front of me, it was a challenge in those years. Although there was institutional backing for me and there were people that I knew, but still I had to go to many places where there wasn't any Krishna consciousness and find a means to find some people. And when I started going to the Soviet Union, I used to go with tours. Sometimes people are intrigued by these stories because... So I'll share just a little bit about that. I think to help you a little bit understand about how Krishna consciousness began to grow. But one important thing to understand before I even explain all that is that although it may sound like I was pioneering or going to these places, Srila Prabhupada's books were already there. And many people, of course, many devotees used to smuggle them into the Soviet Union by different means. And a lot of Russians would go to India, and devotees would meet them in places like Connaught Circle, Connaught Place, and would give them some of Prabhupada's books and ask them if they would carry them into the country. And then... that's one way they got in there. And then another way was, I believe it was in 1986, there was a book fair. And Gopal Krishna Goswami, being an Indian, and because there were relationships between the Soviet Union and India, he was invited to go to the book fair, and somehow he was able to get Srila Prabhupada's books there for a cultural reason. And they were on display in the exhibition in Moscow. And when people saw those books, many of them came in with their cameras and they shot pictures of every single page of the book. and that's another way of how Srila Prabhupada's books actually entered into the Soviet Union, was people taking pictures of them. And then... some gradually, because Srila Prabhupada had gone there in 1971. Srila Prabhupada had gone there in 1971. That's right, we just had the 25th anniversary. Was it the 25th? Oh, in Moscow? No. I'm losing track. 30th. What was the celebration we had in Moscow? 40th. Yeah. I'm losing track of time here. 40th. 40th anniversary in Moscow of Prabhupada's visit. And he had gone there to meet a professor. He was invited there. And Prabhupada was very, very determined. He wanted to go there. He asked Shyama Sundar, his secretary, to get visas, and somehow he was able to secure visas. And the only reason he was allowed to go was to have this one meeting with his professor Katovsky, who was a professor of Indology, I believe. And while Prabhupada was there, he wasn't allowed to do anything else. He was completely restricted. And the only thing he was allowed to do was to go and to meet with the professor, and that was it. But his secretary, Shyama Sundar at the time, had to go out and to secure something to eat, because in the Soviet Union there really wasn't that much to eat in the hotels. I can testify, when I used to go in on the tour groups, I used to go with these as a tourist, and I had to be a tourist the whole time I was there, and sometimes I would just break away, I'd slip away, disappear. But I had to be with the tour group most of the time, and whenever they would sit down to eat in the hotels, the only thing that I could eat was carrot and celery strips. That's the only thing that was available. And every time they would sit down and eat and have their meat and other things that were available in the buffet on the hotels, I was always sitting with them with carrot and celery strips. And
they had so, no potatoes?
No, not in the restaurants. Carrot and celery strips. That was it. That's all I could get, practically speaking, every hotel. And, I had to explain, you know. I told them I drank bad water or something. That's all I could eat, to make up some kind of an excuse. Of course, I was eating with the devotees. They didn't know that. And with the devotees, I had potatoes and carrots. I was feasting. Something hot. Prabhupada, when he went there in 1971, he sent Shyamasundar out to buy something to cook in the hotel. Shyamasundar, while he was standing in line, somebody saw him and knew he wasn't Russian. He said, "Oh, I was American." And the Russian person who asked him, he said, "Do you have any blue jeans for sale?" Because that was the one thing that you couldn't get in the Soviet Union, was blue jeans, something that everybody wanted. And Shyamasundar said, "No, I don't have any blue jeans, but I have a guru. Would you like to meet him?" And the boy said, sure, I'd like to meet him. And then, so Shyamasundar took him back to the hotel, which was right near Red Square, where Prabhupada was staying, and introduced the Russian boy to Srila Prabhupada, who came with one Indian boy also. And Srila Prabhupada, that's how he planted Krishna consciousness in the Soviet Union. He saw this one boy. In fact, he saw the sincerity of this one boy, and Prabhupada gave the example. He says, when you're cooking a pot of rice, if you take one piece of grain of rice out and it's cooked, then you know the whole pot is cooked. So he says, similarly, by speaking to this one boy, I can understand that these people are ready, very much ready for Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada spoke all afternoon and all evening with this boy and explained to him about Krishna consciousness. And then he wanted to come back the next day. And the whole next day, the boy came back and sat with Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada spoke to him again all day and accepted him as a disciple. And then through this one person, whose name was Ananta Shanti, who recently departed, actually. I think it was about 2 years ago, I think he left his body. But for this one person, he started to pioneer. He's pioneer. I mean, that's pioneering in the Soviet Union, because they were definitely risking their lives. And he was imprisoned. And in fact, he used to give the devotees injections to make them, to alter their brains, you know, to make them give up this idea of God, which was, you know, completely against the norm and against the rules, to what to speak about, think about God, but to tell others about others, which was completely taboo. So he spent some quite time in a psychiatric institution, and was regularly given injections, which affected him. Actually, it affected him. And but it didn't deter him. And gradually he was able to get Srila Prabhupada's books in, and then they were just getting a few copies. They got access to a Xerox machine. And they started to make Xerox copies of Bhagavad Gita as it is, to go out into the streets and distribute. And to have even a Xerox machine during that time, actually, and to be printing books of this nature was actually was grounds for execution. Really, it's no joke. And devotees had to risk setting up a little printing press and starting to copy these books, and then one body would gather together and they would stitch the books together by hand, take all the pages together. And I remember going there when they had some of these books that they were stitching, and even in the late 80s. And then they would go out into the streets, but they wouldn't coordinate themselves because it was too risky. And devotees used to tell me stories that sometimes they would go out into the streets in Moscow to meet people and to pull them aside and to show them a book. And this one devotee told me how one time he pulled somebody over and showed, "I have a book about spiritual life, and would you be interested in the other?" And the person looked at him and said, reached in his bag, and he said, "I have one too." And they were both doing the same thing, but they didn't even know each other. That's how secretive it was. They didn't even know each other. And then there was another story I remember, and it happened in I think it was the late 70s. Because this is the time when when whatever small group of devotees were there, many of them were not only put in psychiatric institutions, but they were put in prison. And in prison, they would just preach. Anybody, for them, they had such faith that was somehow given to them by reading Prabhupada's books and hearing how Krishna consciousness is so important and so relevant to their lives. It was a spiritual foundation to their lives. So even in prison, it didn't deter them. And one devotee was telling me the story. He said one time he started preaching to a prison guard. And the prison guard turned to him and immediately ran away. And the devotee said, "Where are you going?" He says, "I know what you people are like. You are so convinced about what you're doing that if I listen to you, I know I'll be in jail too, just like you." So he's running away in fear, not wanting to be convinced. So those were the real pioneering days. I came on the crest of the wave, so to speak, in the late 1980s. And my first visit, I was with a tour. I flew Pan Am from New York to direct flight to Moscow, and I had to stay in the hotel in Moscow. And devotees were scheduled to meet me at a certain time in front of St. Basil's Cathedral. And I was told that once I got to the hotel, I had to sneak out and find a payphone and somehow make contact with the person who was supposed to meet me, because on the following morning after the flight, I was supposed to break away from the tour group. That's what I used to have to do. I'd had a camera around my neck. I had my hair was growing out, and I would go around to all the different places taking pictures as if I was interested. And then at a certain time, I would just disappear. So I had to meet a certain person the following morning, so I was told to go to a payphone and call this person. So I had just my first visit, very first visit to the Soviet Union. There I was, just got off the plane, taken to the hotel, I can't remember the name, it's right behind St. Basil's. Rus?
I was
from Rus. Okay, anyways, she's from Moscow, so that's why I'm turning to her. And and then we were all checked in. There were about a small group, about 18, 20 people, I think, that were on the group. And everybody went to sleep. They were jet lagged, and I just went out to the phone booth. And every group had a tour guide. They had an in-tourist guide, which was from the Soviet Union, and we had a tour guide that came with us from America, who was American, and he was sort of like interface with the in-tourist, because he spoke English, and the in-tourist guides never spoke English. And he would sort of like coordinate the tours for us. So he told us what to do. When we got to the hotel, told everybody to go to sleep, and I snuck out and I went to the phone booth. So I went to the phone booth. I didn't have any coin. I needed kopeck to put in the phone. So there was a person next to me. And I tapped him. I had no currency. So I tapped him on the shoulder. And who turns around but the in-tourist guide who's standing next to me on the phone. I hadn't been in the Soviet Union more than maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours at most. And I turned and I looked and I said, no, I just got here and I'm already caught. And first thing he said to me, he says, "What are you doing here?" And I didn't know what to say. So I somehow, Krishna, I just said to him, "What are you doing here?" I didn't know what to say. Somehow, Krishna inspired me to say, "What are you doing here?" And then I figured I'd get rid of it. You know, I couldn't tell him what I was doing there. Like, I'm not supposed to know anybody. You know, I'm a tourist. So he said, "Well, I asked you first. What are you doing here?" And then I said, I'm just very persistent. I just said, "What are you doing here?" And it was sort of like back and forth. It was like I didn't want to tell him, and he didn't want to tell me either. And then finally he broke down first. He said, "Well, I'm Jewish." He says, "I'm an in-tourist guide, and I come here to meet Jews." Wow. In the Soviet Union. He said, I don't know why he told me that. I don't even know why he trusted me. He said, "That's why I'm here making a phone call." He says, "I'm going to take you on a tour tomorrow, and then I'm going to go off, and I brought some things for the Jewish people here in Moscow." So then I said, "Well, I'm a Hare Krishna. nice to know who you are." And he said, "Nice to know who you are, too." He said, "You don't say anything about me, I won't say anything about you." And that was my first entry into the Soviet Union. And then we used to have gatherings. I mean, that first trip I had gatherings in somebody's flat. And then I think we had a gathering in the forest too. We had to go out into the forest and we had to put plastic from branch to branch because it was raining. And we had to stay under the plastic because we couldn't meet in any. It was too risky to meet any place.
What year was that you started?
I started going, right, it was during Perestroika. It was 1989.
End of the
80s. End of the 80s, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember mentioning that you had started going to.
Yeah.
So now it's like big thriving, right?
Of course, yes. But my experience was is because Srila Prabhupada's books were already there and people had already been introduced to Krishna consciousness. For me, it was sort of like I was feeling that Prabhupada's books had already changed so many people's lives. And they were so sincere and so eager to hear that I felt that Krishna, who was in their heart, was reciprocating with their desire to hear about Krishna consciousness. And somehow I was in the middle and getting caught in the crossfire. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, you know, because at that time, of course, many people wanted to hear anything that wasn't the party line.
So there was no practice in Soviet Union at all? No kind of church? Russian Orthodox, nothing?
Oh, even the Orthodox Church was, yeah, they were being used for so many other things at that time. Yeah, they were sure. And older people were allowed to go to the church. They were allowed to go, but younger people were not allowed to go. Yeah, in fact, many devotees used to tell me stories that in their youth they had to watch movies of priests being decapitated. Yeah, that's the kind of, yeah, that's, they said it was standard in school at the time. And,
just to kill everyone's faith so that they
would... Yeah. And, so there were many harrowing stories. Certainly devotees during those years could relate. Many, many other stories I could share, but the upshot of it is that once having gone there, and then when communism fell in 1991, because I had been visiting many times, and the reason why I was able to visit, it was because of somebody who used to live here in Boston. His name was Charlie Gere.
Charlie.
Yes. Do you remember Charlie? Different Charlie? Yeah, Charlie. No, not Charlie Sullivan. This is Charlie Gere. He was one of Maharishi's top men. He was right up at the top of the tier for Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. And the Maharishi told him, I think it was in the 70s sometime, early 70s, he told him that you should go help Swami Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada.
Hmm. I heard that story. I didn't realize that was him.
That was him.
Wow.
That was Charlie.
Hmm.
So, and because he had graduated from Harvard Business School, he was doing quite well in investments. And he actually developed a software at that time that was foolproof in making investments. And he developed the software himself, so he used to do quite well, mostly precious metals. So he was quite well-to-do. And I was friends with him. And he thought he would be nice to go to the Soviet Union. So I contacted the devotee who was overseeing what was going on there and said that Charlie would like to go. Maybe he can do something to help there. And then Charlie said to me, he says, well, I'm not going to go alone. He says, I'll only go if you go with me. So then I told that to the Kirti Raj, who was overseeing the Soviet Union at that time. And Kirti Raj, at that time, there were only two people who were going in the Soviet Union amongst devotees. So, and he was quite careful about who would go in. It was somebody that really had to follow the rules,
mm-hmm.
so that devotees wouldn't get in trouble, and because they were still in prison. Some of them had been released by that year. Many of them had been released, but some of them were still in prison. And so he said, okay. So, but every trip used to cost about $5,000. Because you had to pay for the tourist fees, you had to pay for the hotel fees, you had to pay. So Charlie would come with me every time, and he would sponsor my trip. In fact, we had to learn together all the different codes. We had to speak in code because all the hotels were bugged. And we could never speak, say, Krishna in the hotel. And we had to learn how to speak in codes in the hotel. And then I used to have to chant japa in the morning. Because in the middle of the winter, I couldn't chant in the hotel. So I would go down into the subways and I would take for hours. In the morning, a couple of hours in the morning, I just get on from one subway car to another subway car chant my japa in the morning because it was like minus 35 degrees outside, so now we couldn't go outside. And what it was like in the early days. But then when communism finally fell in 91, then and we were able to come out in the open. And because I was already there, then that's how I got very much involved in the Soviet Union. And I was asked to take responsibilities for the... We didn't have any temples at that time. There were no temples. But for the countries of Ukraine and Moldova, what was called Moldavia, yeah. And for Belarus and Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia.
Now you live there?
No, most of my time is in Ukraine. More than other places in Ukraine. I was going to talk a little bit. Nima asked if I would speak a little bit about Lord Chaitanya, maybe. Or is there something in particular you would like me to speak about?
No, whatever inspired talk
about. I think it's important, and I like to speak a lot about the chanting. And, of course, the emphasis in chanting Hare Krishna is that we quoted a verse last night, Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, how the holy name of Krishna is transcendentally blissful and bestows all spiritual benedictions because it is Krishna himself, the reservoir of pleasure. And it's not a material name under any circumstance, and no less powerful than Krishna himself. Is never eternally liberated and spiritual, and it is Krishna himself, none different than Krishna. And we were speaking how that Krishna's name, being none different from Krishna, can bestow all kinds of spiritual benedictions. And when we think of spiritual benedictions, generally many things can go through our mind about what kind of benedictions we would like if given the opportunity to receive, and what would we like to ask for. And the name itself, because it's not different from Krishna, is actually the greatest benediction in of itself, to receive the name. And Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, and his purpose for his appearance was to display his transcendental leelas, his pastimes, and to, with his eternal associates, and to attract people of this world to a realm which was beyond this temporary physical world. And by displaying his loving relationships with his eternal associates, his pastimes, people could become awakened to their true spiritual nature. And as we were saying last night, and we were speaking at Tamal Krishna's Prabhu's home, that sometimes we think that the goal of chanting Hare Krishna is simply to become peaceful. But actually, that's a byproduct. Mm-hmm. That there's much more than being peaceful. Peacefulness, of course, is a freedom from distress, certainly. And with it, one is not distracted or disturbed by any external upheavals, or one is able to tolerate any situation or circumstance, and to accept everything as coming from the unseen hand of the Supreme Lord. Yeah. And persons who are in that state of mind, certainly they can achieve a state of peace by knowing that they are spiritual, eternal, and not this body. In fact, Prabhupada he tells the story about the cat who carries the kitten. In fact, my sister might be surprised about this story, because I remember when I was a little boy, we had, was it Squeaky? We had a cat. Yeah, I remember the cat in our back hall in Rodora Street had a litter of kittens.
She had the litter of kittens on a neighbor's front porch.
Well, I remember we had a litter of kittens in the box.
Carry them back.
That's right.
Back porch.
But I remember also carrying them on the back porch, and I remember also that the cat, the mother, took each kitten one by one and carried them up and put the kittens in the rafters so that we wouldn't touch them. I definitely remember watching through the window. definitely remember, because you know the cat smelled human hands on the kittens, and she wanted to protect her newborns. And Prabhupada tells a story of the mother cat that when the mother comes and carries the kitten, she opens her mouth, shows her teeth, and picks the kitten up from behind the neck. I was watching this as she was carrying each kitten and carrying them up, putting in the rafters. And the kitten feels no fear, because the kitten is obviously, this is my mother. What fear is there? My mother coming, she's carrying me away. There's no fear from the teeth. The Prabhupada says that when the cat comes before the mouse, she shows her same mouth and the same teeth, but the mouse has a different perspective. And therefore the mouse runs in fear. So Prabhupada says, gives this analogy to help us understand that for a devotee who understands transcendental, eternal, it's not the body, body is temporary, casing for the eternal soul. This is a certain state of peacefulness which comes by realizing that one's not this body. And therefore, at the time when one has to give up the body, it's just like the kitten who sees the mother coming to carry me home. But there is a certain state of peace that certainly one can experience by detachment. But Lord Chaitanya, through the distribution of the holy name, wanted to give us more than simply to become peaceful. And as we explained, there's something far more than just peace which can be achieved through chanting. And he wanted to come, he came for that purpose, although Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago to display his eternal pastimes to attract the fallen souls to that transcendental realm. It's explained that when Krishna came, he set a condition, and in Bhagavad Gita it is stated, Sarva Dhamma Paritya Jahis. Krishna says, first you surrender unto me, and I will deliver you from all sinful reactions. But then Krishna wanted to come again. And this time, he was thinking, it's been a long time since the residents of this world have been able to come to the platform of spontaneous loving devotional service in that eternal world, which is beyond this physical world, which Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. He says this abode is unmanifested and infallible, is the eternal destination, and when one goes there, he doesn't have to come back. That is my supreme abode. So not only did he come and display that, but not many people could recognize him for who he was. So he decided, let me come again. But this time, he was thinking that instead of coming as the Supreme Lord, he decided he wanted to come as a devotee of the Lord. And because as a devotee of the Lord, he could teach by his own example how to achieve this state of consciousness through the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. And because he himself was always chanting the names of Krishna, although he was Krishna himself, he wanted to experience this mood of being a devotee, and by experiencing himself, tasting it himself, he wanted to make it accessible to others. As we were explaining in Boston in the temple the other day, that this is how to make Krishna consciousness accessible. It becomes very accessible when there's an example. If there's no example, it's theoretical. It's something that sounds nice. But if we don't see an example, then we start to question, is it achievable? Is it possible? So the Lord was thinking, I will come again, but this time I will come and teach by my example. And he said, because if the example is not there, then how can you expect others to follow? So he came again 500 years ago as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And his purpose in this age of Kali, as the Yuga Avatar, was to distribute the holy name of the Lord and to make this spontaneous, loving, devotional service of the spiritual world accessible to anyone through the distribution of these names. And as we were explaining that, for one who establishes a connection with the Supreme Lord through the chanting of his names, and Lord Chaitanya himself says, Kali Kali Nama Rupa Krishna Avatar Nama Hoite Hoisava Jagat Nistira. He says, in the age of Kali, in this current age of hypocrisy and quarrel, the Lord appears, but in the form of his name. And anyone who associates with his name is as good as associating with him directly. And certainly he's delivered. Such is the power, the potency of the name. Prabhupada used to give the example that if you want to become pure, you have to associate with pure. So he would say that just like fire, if you put an iron rod into fire, then although it's iron, if you keep it in the association of fire, the longer it stays in the association of fire, it burns just like fire. In fact, if you touch it, you'll say it's fire because of association. So Krishna's name is pavitram, is completely pure. Because Krishna is pure, Krishna's name is pure. And if we associate with Krishna's name, we become pure. And therefore, as Lord Chaitanya states in his Shikshastika prayer, Chaito Dapana Majanam Bhava Mahadevagni Nirvapana, he says that this chanting of the holy name of the Lord, it cleanses the heart from all the dust accumulated for years together. And thus the fire of conditioned life and repeated birth and death is extinguished. Wow. It's the prime benediction for humanity at large. It spreads the rays of the benediction moon and is able to give one the taste of that full nectar for which every one of us are hankering for. Every one of us by nature are hankering for pleasure. There's some pleasure in peace, but Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure. Right? There's much more pleasure to be had than just to become peaceful. And because Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure, and he's Govinda, he's one who gives pleasure to the senses. He gives a pleasure by coming in contact with him that far surpasses any of the temporary pleasures of this world. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya came, but he took away the conditions that Krishna set. Krishna said, first you surrender and I will deliver you. And Lord Chaitanya took away the condition and said, here, taste. That's all. Here, taste. What's our qualification? He started. He made the first move. If we look at our, you know, our own, you know, qualifications, and maybe we may think we have from past lives or whatever, it's not there. But Lord Chaitanya took away that condition, and he awakened the taste, not only because he was sharing himself in the form of his name, but because he himself was experiencing that taste that a devotee experiences who loves Krishna. And because he was experiencing that taste, which is another reason why he came, was to experience that taste, because he was thinking, what is it that the devotees see in me that's so attractive? What do they see in me? I don't know that. Imagine that. The all-knowing Supreme Lord didn't know something. I want to know what they see in me. Not only do I want to know what they see in me, I want to taste it too. I want to experience. Because these seem to have much more taste loving me than even the taste, the pleasure I experience. I want to know. But he couldn't do that as Krishna. And therefore, in order to experience that taste, he had to come as his devotee. So he awakens that sweet taste of his name and made it so accessible by tasting it himself. And took away all conditions and said, taste. You would like to taste too? Taste it. Take it. No charge for this mantra. No other qualifications. Lord Nityananda, who was came with Lord Chaitanya as his associate, he came and he assisted the Lord, and he broke open the storehouse of love and distributed profusely, and he didn't take into consideration one's position, his wealth, his aristocracy, you know, whatever. These things weren't his criteria for distributing the Lord's name. Only condition he establishes that faith, just a little faith. That's the price to purchase the name. Let me try. Let me try. A little faith. And Lord Nityananda is so merciful that when somebody comes and with a little faith to take Krishna's name, then he gives more. In fact, it is stated in the marketplace of the holy name of the Lord, where many people come to distribute the holy name, there's no price. The holy name is freely distributed. Yet it is described that there are, Dalalir Gita describes how there is a broker. And the broker, he takes the holy name of the Lord, he gives it to others, and then he takes his own commission. And yet, the price that he takes for the name is, you can't buy it with wealth, you can't buy it with power, you can't buy it with beauty. None of these things are considered to be criteria for purchasing the name. The only wealth, the real wealth, the currency in the marketplace of the holy name is simply faith. Mm-hmm. That's all. The fact is, in the marketplace of the holy name, there are some people who check. Just like you ever go to the airport and give them $100 bill and they hold it up and immediately look to see if there's a silver stripe, to see if the currencies or whatever the strip that's in there. So in the marketplace of the holy name, there are people who check to make sure that the right currency is being used for getting the holy name. Because you can't get it without the right currency. If you think you can get it by wealth, power, beauty, no. Right currency is just faith. And he just asks, have a little faith. But he's so merciful. That even those who were faithless, when they saw Nityananda, his method of distribution, with tears in his eyes, he would fall on his ground, on the ground, pleading, please take, risking his life. Please take. When they saw such love that he had, even faithless people had their faith awakened by seeing his method of distribution. Not only did he give the Lord's name, but he gave the faith to take it. if this person can undergo such a method for distributing the name, imagine what value he must experience in this name. Faith is awakened. In fact, the example is given. Sometimes you see, I remember in the early days in the Soviet Union, actually, people, they have samples. If people would go out in the street and they would carry a little, right? Yeah, all the time, right? Because they were trying to make it, build up the market in the Soviet Union. So the companies would go in there and they'd send people into the streets with these little trays with free samples. And they would stand on the corner and they would hand out free samples to everybody. Here, try this, try this, try this. Free. So, what they really want you is, once you've tested the free sample, they want you to come back and buy the product. So Lord Nityananda gave out free samples. He gave out, here's some faith. Even though you may not have had, here's some faith. Because he was relishing so much. He broke open and created faith. And when people see, they got a little free sample of faith. And then when they got that little free sample, they were thinking, well, it looks like a good investment. Maybe I'll give a little more. Maybe I'll come back and get the big bottle. That was his method of distribution. His method of distribution was to freely give it and say, take! Nothing else. Vaishnava is not interested in any wealth, fame, power, position. He's only interested in giving what he considers to be so valuable and making it available to others. And Krishna says, Nachatasman Manushishu Kaschin Me Priyakritama. He says, the one who tells others about this, he says, for him, Yaidam paramam guyam madbhaktesha vajashasi. For one who explains the secret to others, for him, his devotional service is guaranteed. The end, he comes back to me. Nachatasman manusheshu kashtin me priyakritama. He says, there's no servant in this world more dear to me than he. Now will there ever be one more dear. Krishna takes care. Why does one have to aspire for any of these things? And then, by distributing and by giving it to others, taste only increases. We don't want to be miserly. A miserly person wants, he simply counts his wealth and thinks, oh yes, how I can enjoy. But a person who's, that's kripana, but a brahmana is one who's, he's thinking, how can I share? How can I give it to others? I shouldn't just keep it for myself. Such a taste. Why should I be so miserly and just keep it for myself? This is what Lord Chaitanya taught. And therefore he said, how many fruits can I alone distribute? I can't do it myself. He's asked everybody, please come, help me distribute these fruits of love of Godhead. Make them available to others. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He came 500 years ago and freely distributed, giving this holy name, making it accessible. And all he asks us is to take it. And then by taking and by chanting and by experiencing, or with a little faith, going back and buying the bigger bottle, whatever it may be, then he's ready to give more. He says, I can't distribute it all alone. Please help me, these fruits. This is the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if we simply, very humbly and simply, try to accept what he has come to give us in the proper mood, trinadapi sunichina tarari vasihishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahi. Lord Chaitanya says, if you want to chant this name constantly, then you should chant the holy name of the Lord in a very humble state of mind. Thinking yourself to be lower than the straw in the street. Very devoid of all sense of false prestige and ready to offer all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can always chant the holy name of the Lord. This is our Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, our Param Guru, said, this verse of Sikshastika is the Siddha Pranali for Vaishnavas. This is Siddha Pranali. Sometimes people think Siddha Pranali means, oh, I get my Siddha. I know what my Siddha, my eternally perfected form. Lord Chaitanya, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says the Siddha Pranali, the means for achieving perfection, Siddha, is found in Trinadapi Samichina. This is the means for perfection. Lord Chaitanya says that you should take this verse, you should string it on the garland of the holy name of the Lord, and you should wear it around your neck for constant remembrance. Constant remembrance. And therefore the holy name, very merciful and kind when distributed by Lord Chaitanya and his representative, will act as like a very potent drug, will act and will cleanse the heart of all misgivings, and not of all the dust accumulated for years together. And not only will it bring one a state of peace, but it'll actually establish us into our eternal relationship with the Supreme. Carry us right there. All available in Krishna's name. Well, this is what Nimai Chaitanya Prabhu is distributing for all of you who come. Very kind. He is coming and inviting you all to come and to experience this nectar that he has received and sharing it with all of you. And I thank him for the opportunity to come here with all of you and sharing what he is showing by his example, encouraging me to do also.
Thank you for your mercy also.
And for his friendship, I'm very grateful. Awesome. Can we have one more kirtan?
Yes.
Jack, yes?
Please.
Okay.
If you're up for it.
I don't know what's the schedule.
What time is it?